welcome to the program. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Okay, so imagine, do you remember the last time that you went and rented a DVD from Blockbuster or any kind of video rental store? Do you remember? We used to do that all the time, right? It was a totally normal thing. It was part of staying in, right? You would say, all right, I'm going to watch a movie, and honey, on the way home from work, go ahead and pick out a movie, or you take the kids, and the kids would pick a movie, and then. Well, anyway, it was just totally normal. Well, it was so normal for this one man in Concord, California. He had rented a VHS tape 14 years ago. The movie, in case you're wondering, is the 2002 classic Freddy Got Fingered, which was not in the pornography aisle, but rather was a gross-out comedy about some kind of cartoonist. If you remember this movie, I never saw it, but Robbie is in there nodding behind the glass. It must be one of his favorites. Well, what happened to this guy? 14 years ago, he rents this VHS tape. Value, probably not very high. And he does not return it. Now, the store where he rented this video has long gone out of business. I mean, it's history, right? And he was just, this man, James Myers, was just arrested for, what does it say? Failing to return rental property. A misdemeanor. Yeah, he got fingered. That's what happened. So he's driving his daughter to school. Can you imagine? You're driving your kid to work and you get pulled over by the cops and you think, oh yeah, I'm 5 miles over the speed limit, or, I'm in a school zone. I shouldn't have been going 45, whatever it is. And they run his license, as they do, when they pull you over, and I guess, sir, you need to step out of the car. You're under arrest. And the guy is floored. You can imagine. I mean, you'd be floored too. So, long story short, it's about a $200 fine. But, and the officers did not take him in. They did not. They allowed him to take his daughter to school, which I think is, obviously, is very nice of them. They could have been jerks. And, they might have taken, it probably was really polite, but he was put into handcuffs in front of his daughter. Can you imagine how traumatic that would be? And Tom Green apparently chimed in. He thought that the story was incredible and shared it on his Twitter account. So anyway, if you haven't returned that DVD or that VHS tape, if you have one out that you, well, what's that guilty look, Missy? What's that? Yeah. And where do you return it? I mean, isn't that the million-dollar question? I mean, where do you go to return it? So imagine that, Blockbuster has long been dissolved in bankruptcy. I don't know. You just send it into your nearest police station, but wipe it clean of any fingerprints, I don't know what to tell you. That's a no-win deal there. No-win deal. All right. Have you heard? This is going on everywhere, and it boils me. You heard last week about these university students, these sensitive university students at Emory University, and they are stressed out. They're stressed out. They are. I mean, it's college life is really getting to them. And it's not finals. If you're wondering, of course, exams, reports, papers, due dates, dating challenges, STDs. No, it's none of that. These students are living in fear. They've been shaken to their core, and they are expressing their outrage to their college president in a town hall forum, challenging the university on their failure to prevent them from being exposed to this trauma. What is it? Chalk drawings. Yes, not even drawings. Chalk slogans. And they read, Trump 2016. One of these drawings read, accept the inevitable, Trump 2016. You can't make this stuff up. So this is the president of the school apparently has been, these students, I can't even wrap my head around this. He'd been called into the boardroom by students and listened at the head of the table as they described how the appearance of chalkings made them feel. He addressed several questions throughout the time in the boardroom. And he says here that it represented an outside threat. Okay, so I love this. So, outside threat. First of all, Emory University believes that there's no way that a college student, any way, shape, or form, could ever actually be for Trump. You know, I remember, and we talked about this on this program, when it was happening, you know, and it's fallen out of favor in the news. We've gotten carried away with this, all this political news. But remember when we talked about the UC Regents and their new policies against microaggressions? Do we remember this? Where saying things like, you can be anything you set your mind to be, or America, land of opportunity. Microaggression. You're going to be disciplined for that if you go to a UC school. So, the UC Regents are the people that run the UC system. And they're liberals for the most part. Crazy left-wing nuts. Well, you just remember your college professor. Remember that guy? You know, the guy in Birkenstocks. Smoked a lot of weed. You know, they are that only on steroids, right? So they're the ones that have come up through the system to run the whole crazy institution. But it used to be that you went to college, you went to a university, especially a great university, and there opposite you in class was a student that you disagreed with or a professor that you disagreed with. And here is what would happen. You would gasp, have a debate, and you would argue. And you know what? Maybe there's things that your professor would say that you'd think, hey, you know, maybe I need to think about that. And then maybe another student would say something and you'd say, no, that's wrong, and I'm going to tell you why. And they would think about it. But where critical thinking occurs is when you're confronted, not even confronted, I'm going to go as far as say slapped in the face with a dissenting opinion. The easiest cop out in the world is saying, I'm offended. Do you ever hear that from someone? I'm offended. I'd have this happen in law school all the time and... No, I didn't have a filter. It might surprise you to learn. And I offended a lot of people. And it was probably the best part about going to law school. Because you have all these cerebral, smart people in a room. And it ought to be this terrific environment for getting at what people think and what and why. It's the why that matters, right? Explain yourself, because I can explain myself. I can talk about why I believe in conservatism as a as an ideology. I can explain why I believe that liberalism is a completely defunct ideology and why it creates poverty. I can explain it, and I can have that discussion with you, and guess what? I can still like you. You can still be my friend, but we can talk about it. Well, not so if you go to pretty much any university these days. And so these students, the assumption is, right, that this that these slogans that are being these chalkings are coming from outside of the university. The president of the school isn't even putting it in his mind that if there's a possibility that there are students on campus that might support Trump. And the school is promising quick action. They're going to go after, they are, you know what, they're going to use security cameras and track down these students that, they're going to track down these students that that did this, or these people that did this. They're going to find them. And you know, of course, they can't punish free speech, but they can't punish vandalism. And it begets the question, what would happen if it was Bernie, feel the burn, was being chalked on the sidewalk? How is chalk vandalism? It's not. But it's an example of where the bias of these, the liberal bias of these colleges, that you, if you've got kids in college, you're paying for this. Your hard-earned money is paying for this kind of nonsense. I'm going to tell you what the result of all this BS is. I almost want to use a real word. This is BS. I'm going to tell you how this is going to affect all of us very soon. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC. Slogans, seeing these chalkings on their campus, these poor Emory students, what did they feel? They felt attacked. They felt attacked. And they also claim, and this is all from the Emory Wheel, which I presume is some terrible student newspaper on campus, has them, I mean, what did they say here? I'm supposed to feel comfortable and safe here, but this man is being supported by students on our campus, and our administration shows that they, by their silence, support it as well. I don't deserve to feel afraid at my school. Close quote. And that's a direct quote from an actual student who attends Emory University. You would have thought that, you know, that he was, there's a burning cross on the lawn. And no, just a slogan supporting Donald Trump. Trump 2016. Now, yeah, what would Trump say? Don't play tiddlywinks with free speech. Do we baby our kids more than we used to? Is that what this... Well, you know my opinion on this. 100% yes. I remember when I was... I was in elementary school in the 80s. And it became fashionable during that time to talk about kids and their self-esteem. Do you remember this? Missy? Yeah, self-esteem. It was a big concept. Because, you know, for years, kids were smacked around, told do this, do that, respect your elders, work hard. You got that wrong. Hey, you know what? 1 + 1 = 2. If you wrote down 3, you're a retard. I mean, you can't do that. It's wrong. Or if you wrote a sentence that was grammatically incorrect, you were told, you know what? You need to learn how to write. Okay? If you didn't finish your homework, if you came to school and your work wasn't done, you'd go to detention. And I remember when I was a kid, it began, this process began of suggesting gently to parents that they take a softer approach to parenting. And that there is you really got to worry about little Johnny's self-esteem. His little personality is in there, and it's growing, and it's like a delicate flower. And, you know, Mrs. Smith, if you and Mr. Smith are not careful, that delicate flower, it's not going to bloom. And so parents all across America went home and had quiet conversations at the kitchen table when their kids were asleep and would say things to themselves such as, you know, maybe we ought to just encourage him more. And out of this mumbo-jumbo nonsense arose a generation of nincompoops who all overestimate their value, their worth, their smarts, their skills. So I am not a child psychologist, but I might as well ought to be after managing people, especially young people, for the last 15 odd years. Because the front line, it used to be that the front line of child rearing was the home. But you see, parents, when they took on this self-esteem nonsense, stopped raising their kids. You know, if you talk back to your mom, so in my house, if you talk back to my mom or my dad, you'd get whacked. That's just the way it worked. The way some of my contemporaries, my friends, talk to their parents, I'd wince because I could just feel that slap coming. I could feel it flying through the air, and then to my shock and surprise, my friend's parents would giggle and say, "Oh, you're funny. Oh, isn't Sam? Oh, you kids are so funny." Yeah, and some of these kids, I don't want to skip to the end of the story, but some of these kids that got away with murder, I kind of envied them, right, at the time, and there's some real life losers out there, I'll tell you that. And so, you know, so it used to be that the kid was raised in the home. The parents raised their kids. And if it failed there, these kids went to school and they had some hard, difficult life reality lessons. Remember that whole dog ate your homework? Why is it funny? It's funny because it's a lame excuse. And it's one the teacher did not buy. And so suddenly you were confronted by a reality, right? You showed up, you went to class, and you didn't have your homework done. And there it is. You're embarrassed. You're called that in front of the classroom. Well, little Johnny, looks like you didn't do your work. Come see me after class. And then you'd get one of those little pink slips. And you'd go to detention where you'd cool your heels with all the finest talent that your school had to offer. There's a whole movie about it, for Pete's sake. That's right. Breakfast Club. This was a thing. You got in trouble. But no. The feel-good movement, the self-awareness movement, the self-esteem movement took hold of even the school system, right? And slowly, students began to be told, no, you know what? It's okay. You just need to try a little bit harder. It's okay. you're still doing a really good job. Never mind that by any metric you're failing. You think I'm not taking this too far. Every standardized test has been dumbed down over the years. The SAT, this is current news. The SAT is not the same exam that I took back in 1997. It's not the same test. It's dumbed down. It's easier. Why? You answer the question. So here we have, so the role has been advocated by parents. It's been abdicated by the school districts. And now you've got this nonsense. Well, at least the kid goes to college, right? At least the kid goes to college and has a real, you know, a real professor who just is a badass and is going to tell him what, show him what's up. But no, these kids go to school and they're afraid. They are afraid when they see a political slogan with which they disagree. And the university's response is not, get a grip. The university's response is, we hear you, we understand your concerns, you matter to us, and blah, 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 blah. And this is, I'm telling you, so the universities have now given up. You've got microaggressions, right? You can't say all this nonsense about, you know, men and women can succeed equally. That's a microaggression. I can't even explain it. So then what happens is little Johnny was never said no to by his parents, was never said no to an elementary school, junior high, high school. Little Johnny goes to Emory University, cries a river when he sees a Trump slogan. And then little Johnny applies for a job at my law firm. And then it's my damn job to raise little Johnny and to pimp slap him into some reality. And folks, I'm going to tell you, it's frustrating. It's frustrating. Because you have people showing up all over the workforce. And if you have ever trained anybody, if you're an employer or you're a manager, it doesn't matter what business you're in. If you're working with young people, you know what I'm talking about. People come through the door, work for a week, and think that they're going to be vice president in a year. That's one syndrome. What's another thing? They think that they are contributing. It's the biggest misnomer. Generally speaking, in just about any business, when somebody begins a job, they know nothing about the job, right? Unless it's assembly line work. And even there, I mean, it requires some kind of a skill set. You know, it's hard working a cash register. You got to learn how to use it. And in that time period that you're being trained, you don't know crap. And your employer, I'm telling you, your employer is paying money to educate you. No, you are not God's greatest gift to your employer. At that point in time, you are a drain on your employer's resources until your employer figures out, trains you, right? You learn how to use whatever equipment. You learn how to do your job. And only then do you become an asset. But when you walk in the door and you've been told how great you are your whole entire life, and then someone like me criticizes you. I mean, you can't get the best out of people. Every great business needs, absolutely must get the everybody's A game out of them. To get somebody's A game, you've got to put pressure on them. You've got to squeeze them. You've got to make them You've got to make him cry. I mean, it's nuts. But Emory University, the only thing that's meant to make you cry is a Trump slogan. Back after this. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC. In the days of 39, oh, please leave the bandana open. The ritual of the dead and gone, bullet holes in the cemetery. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC. And, well, imagine this. You are coming home. You're coming home from a late night, and all you want to do is get home when suddenly somebody comes out, runs a red light, and smashes into you. And you get out of the car, and you're stunned. I mean, you just are absolutely stunned, and you start to feel pain, and this person comes out, apologizes, and your car's wrecked, and you're just there wondering how you're going to pick up all these pieces. Well, it's going to be tough. And the first thing that you should not do is talk to their insurance company, even your own insurance company. Believe it or not, they're not on your side. It's true. I mean, their insurance companies make money when they collect premiums. They don't make money when they pay claims, and that's important. So what do you do? What's your first call? You know, you've been listening to this program. You know what your first call is. You call Sweet James. That's right, because he's the attorney that can help you. He'll guide you through the process, work with you, and he'll get you the best recovery. In fact, Sweet James and his team have over $400 million in verdicts and settlements obtained over the years. And it's important because that kind of track record scares insurance companies and will make them want to settle. It'll make them want to offer you money, the kind of money that is fair in your case. They won't horse around. So you don't call the insurance company. You don't talk to them because they're not there to help you. And instead, you call Sweet James Bergner. There are a lot of imposters out there, but he's the real deal. 1-800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit sweetjames.com. All right. So these microaggressions, just to remind you some of this nonsense, you know, because, again, you know, America, we're a unique country. We have probably one of the broadest definitions, at least in practice, of free speech. We have very few limitations on free speech in America. And it's crazy because, you know, just in the news this week, I remember seeing somebody, there was a blogger in Singapore, and we think of Singapore as a free country. And by and large, it is. It's an economically free country. But a blogger, a pregnant lady, is jailed for 10 months for speaking out against the government. Interesting. So we obviously, as Americans, it was somewhere in the Washington Post, I think, was where I read it. But we read that article and we have a visceral reaction to that, which is, that's wrong. That's not right. And, you know, I can tell you that both of my parents grew up in Czechoslovakia, what was then at the time the Socialist Republic of Czechoslovakia, and they grew up in the 50s, which was a period of extreme political oppression. Stalin was still alive, so as a satellite republic of the Soviet Union, Czechoslovakia was not a free place. So when my father and when my mother were young, they could not go to school and express their opinion. In fact, imagine this. My grandparents would have to sit them down And they both did this, you know, this common practice in homes where maybe the parents, the family disagreed with the mainstream communist ideology. You have to sit your kid down and tell him or tell her, when you go to school, don't talk about things that we talk about at home. Don't do it. Yeah, mom and dad, you know, we will. In fact, my grandparents said this to my dad. They told him, they sat him down, they sat down my uncle, and they said, you know what? We have decided that as a family, we've decided that we are going to take a risk by talking openly in front of you. We believe that this is important for your development. We believe that you need to know what we believe. But we also know that this carries a risk. And it is a risk that you can mitigate, and I'd say this more or less retelling this, shortening it up a little bit, but this is a risk you can mitigate by keeping your fat mouth closed when you're outside of the house. And this is very important because, and this is almost inconceivable, right, for us in our, well, or is it? It's inconceivable, right, that you, well, maybe your kid would go to school and say something about what you said at the dinner table. Maybe something along the lines of, boy, we really like that Trump guy. And can you imagine your kid getting disciplined for it? Well, when my parents were young, not only would they get disciplined for it, but the state police would come to and would have arrested my grandfather and probably my grandmother as well. It was that serious. And at one period, certainly during the Stalin years, it would be a matter of life and death. Now, if you had said something kind of wrong, you know, something you shouldn't have said, there would be a process by which you could absolve yourself of wrongdoing. You would be hauled up in front of maybe the town square or some council, and you'd be asked to recant. You'd be asked to apologize, to tell everyone the error of your ways. And at that point in time, you would become compromised, right? You would be neutralized because now everybody would see you as a silly person who didn't mean what you said, and you know, and even the people that maybe thought that what you had to say had some merit would now see you as a weak source. And that is how the regime operated. It operated based on fear. It operated based on embarrassment. It pitted family against family, kids against kids. And it was extremely effective. Extremely effective. So when I talked to my dad about political correctness, the first thing he'll tell you about political correctness is in today's era in the United States, where we have free speech, where we don't put bloggers in prison for opposing the government. He'll tell you that political correctness is much of the same of what he experienced as a kid, right? Isn't that what happens now? You say something that is politically incorrect. And the powers that be, the media, the powers that no one appointed will haul you in front of the tribunal. You have to apologize. You have to eat crow. You have to say, I was wrong. I didn't mean it. It was a gaffe. I put my foot in my mouth. It's true. And so along comes Trump. He doesn't play by this game at all, and everybody's baffled and mystified by it. And there are a whole host of people who are saying, yes, yes, finally, there's a guy that just sticks it to him. He just sticks it to him. And of course, you know, some of the stuff that he's saying is crazy, but he doesn't, The first rule is you don't apologize for it. The minute you apologize, you become compromised. And this is to explain some of what Trump is doing, some of his methods. But it also explains the silliness and the danger of what is happening on our college campuses. Here we are taking arguably our best and our brightest, our young people, and we're putting them in this artificial environment where no one can be offended. Well, or you could also say in an environment where everyone is offended over anything, where you can't say anything controversial, where you have to follow groupthink. Because presumably in this whole Chalkingsgate story, if you had chalked Hillary 2016 on the sidewalk, we wouldn't be reading about it, would we? So it's okay to chalk Hillary 2016, but it's not okay to chalk Trump. And I'm telling you, folks, it's a dangerous thing. It's a dangerous thing because, so I'm telling you, you've got to allow opposing points of view. Otherwise, these young people are not going to be developing critical thinking. They can't. There's a great quote, once you've been offended, you've stopped thinking. What does it even mean to be offended? Saying I am offended is saying I don't like what you're saying, but I can't explain why. How's that? How's that a show of strength? How's that an assertion of your own belief? How is that anything praiseworthy? It's not. In fact, it's an abdication of your responsibility as an American. One of the great things that we have in this country traditionally is that we're all able to voice our opinions. We're able to meet at the water cooler and argue about politics and then go back to our desks and be fine about it. It's one of the things that my parents admire about this country and the reason they came here. And it's something that we can't lose. We can't lose it. But we are, with all these ridiculous tiddlywinks going on. Microaggressions. Yeah, apparently microaggressions like telling an Asian person, why are you so quiet? Gotta love it. Sam Berjofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC, back after this. Speaking of tiddlywinks, Aaron Andrews, just thought, you know, I've talked to so many people and they want my opinion, right? Because, well, so I'll give you a little bit of insight into this and let you know what this all means with this kind of huge verdict when you get, you know, because you know what happened in her case. Well, let's do a quick rundown, right? $55 million. Verdict against the guy who set up the camera and also the hotel, Marriott. There is the verdict was broken up into two. There was a $28 million verdict against Michael Barrett, the pervert stalker who installed the camera in her hotel room door that captured the nude video of Aaron Andrews. And then Marriott, the hotel where it happened. And of course, let me quickly give you a bit of a side note. I've heard some of you have come up to me and emailed me and told me, this is ridiculous. How is the hotel to blame? I mean, the hotel the only thing they did was they rented a room to a pervert and they rented a room to Aaron Andrews and that's it. Not so fast. A couple of things happened. One, the hotel had a policy. The hotel failed to protect Erin Andrews from this person when they gave away her hotel room number to Michael Barrett. And that was a critical part of the lawsuit. The other thing, and you can't do that. You know, and by all means, I mean, test your hotel. If you're ever staying at a hotel, use your cell phone and try to find you at your hotel without knowing the room number. You're going to have you're going to, first of all, have a hard time even getting you on the phone because the hotel should not even release your name. But they definitely can't release your room number. So you're never going to call a hotel and say, "Hi, this is Billy Bob, and I'd like to know where that Sam Rajofsky guy is. I want to get his hotel room number. Can you give it to me?" Not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So producer Robbie's disappointed that I don't have a peephole video. I may produce one myself just to promote the show, so to speak. So you can't do that. Can't do that. The other problem for the hotel was that one of the hotel executives was overheard by a waitress, and you'll remember this from the trial, was overheard giggling at a table after the incident and showing the video to his friend. Okay, bad news. If you have a hotel or any business, regardless, that has something like this happen there, do not download the video. Do not get anywhere near it. And certainly don't be showing it to your friends at McCormick and Schmick's when you're having a bro lunch, drinking beers and eating bad food. You don't want to do that, okay? You do not want to be, because the waitress came up, she saw these guys broing out and showing the video and was disgusted and outraged. And she posts it on Facebook. And then what? Well, Erin Andrews' attorneys find her, and next thing you know, she's testifying. Disastrous witness. Disastrous witness for Marriott. So now the question I've been getting from so many of you is, so what happens if she get $55 million? Well, first of all, you can getting a verdict is easy. I mean, it's not easy. It takes a lot. But with the right case, you can get a big verdict. Verdict is one thing. What we call pockets is another. And this is language that attorneys use to describe the source of funds used to satisfy a judgment. Very fancy way of saying, where's the money at? Okay? You can't... If somebody... So think about it. Imagine you do something bad to somebody. Oh, imagine you cripple someone, right? And it's possible. You know, I know you. You drive like a maniac, right? You're the guy out there in the Prius veering around traffic up and down La Cienega. I saw you today. Well, okay, maybe not you. But you know somebody that does. And you crash into somebody and they get hurt. And that person that's injured, they call Sweet James. And Sweet James, you know, hauls you into court. And the jury goes, yeah, you're an a-hole. Your driving sucks, and you're totally liable. And yeah, $75 million. Well, you can never pay that kind of money. It just doesn't work that way. You can't pay it. And so what you can't pay, they don't get. A judgment doesn't mean that suddenly a money printing machine shows up and brrr, out come the Benjamins. Nope. Doesn't work that way. So when it comes to Michael Barrett, a year in jail, something like that? He didn't serve a very long time. He very wisely pled guilty to some lower charges and got limited jail time, if I recall. But this dude was never very well off to begin with, and so now after most of the time. I don't know. For most people, their financial fortunes do not improve after spending time in jail. So he's probably as broke ass as they come, and the $28 million verdict against him is not worth the paper it's printed on. All he has to do is declare bankruptcy, and usually in a bankruptcy proceeding, that kind of a judgment is wiped clean. Okay? So right off the top, there's a $28 million haircut that's happening to that verdict. $28 million whoosh, gone. Now, the $27 million, that might have some merit. And there's something to consider here that none of the news stories really address, but is there any kind of insurance that applies? Now, companies buy insurance for every kind of crazy thing that can go wrong. You can't buy insurance for intentional torts, intentional acts. You can't, if you really like to punch people, you can't get insured for that. Not going to work. But if you buy insurance, if you're kind of a bad driver, you're worried you're going to hit somebody with your car, you buy insurance for that, and it's insuring you against negligent acts. It's insuring you against whoopsie daisies, okay? So if it is determined that this clerk at this hotel made a whoopsie by giving away Aaron Andrews' hotel room number to the perv, Michael Barrett, then there might be some insurance money that comes up. And here's what none of these news stories address. Marriott may not necessarily be on the hook for the full $27 million if it exceeds the policy limit. And follow me on this, if the insurance company did not pay the policy when they should have, they acted in bad faith. And that means that the insurance company would then be obligated to cover whatever difference between the policy and the value of the verdict against the value of the judgment against their insured, Marriott. So Marriott's a big company. I think this was against this specific Marriott, not the entire chain. They're independently owned and operated. But even then, she's going to see money here. She is going to see money. And if I had to guess, it's not going to be $27 million because they're going to appeal it. And the minute they appeal it, this thing starts to drag on. And it depends on the jurisdiction. But, at some point, there's just a discount. At some point, the appeal drags the process out and the attorneys will come to some kind of agreement to reduce the amount owed in exchange for the defense to drop the appeal. These cases get really ugly. And yeah, is it taxable? Well, that's a good question. Yeah, so if your physical injuries, the IRS, and again, this is just very big. Don't take this as the gospel truth, okay? But the broad strokes on this are that physical injuries are tax-free. If you get a settlement for a physical injury, it's tax-free. And this is where it's nice to settle before you go to trial, because if you go to trial, they'll give you certain amounts they'll give money for punitive damages and for the physical injury and for the emotional injury. They break it up, and it gives the IRS this great roadmap to follow and how they're going to and what part of your the money that you're getting in the end is taxable. So, if Sweet James is your lawyer and you're debating on whether to take something to trial or whether to settle, know that's one of the risks that you run, okay? And so it may get whittled down to as low as $6 million. And we did some math here basically and talks about what kind of insurance money's in there and what happens when all the taxes get taken out. So she's probably not going to see very much money. But the takeaway from it, and the takeaway from like Hulk Hogan and his crazy, the math applies to his case too. What matters here is that these are very painful cases for these companies that have had to face them. And certainly when it comes to Gawker, and I would think hotel chains across, you cannot tell me that hotels across America are sitting their employees down in training sessions going, do not give out anyone's hotel room. Do not. I know, you know, no matter who they are, I bet this kind of case, it's a watershed case because it inflicts punishment on the company more than any regulatory agency ever could. And so and it does. It changes behaviors. And it's a way of, you know, the courts ultimately are a way of protecting, you know, it's a means of protecting consumers, customers, you and me, folks, us, protecting us. All right. This hour just flew. I guess we'll see you next week. Same place. You know the drill. Can't wait. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KABC. Take her out.